Welcome to Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Unless you're from another planet, little golden books had to have been part of your childhood. Billions have been sold since they were first introduced in 1942. Initially, 12 different 42-page books were published. The Pokey Little Puppy, part of the original dozen, is the best-selling golden book of the 20th century, a whopping 17 million. It's also the best-selling picture book of all time. My guest today is Diane Muldrow, editorial director at Golden Books. She's also the New York Times best-selling author of Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Little Golden Book. It's full of humorous yet practical tips for getting the most out of life. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Diane's written dozens of children's books, including We Planted a Tree, Where Do Giggles Come From, and How Do Penguins Play. She also edited Golden Legacy, How Golden Books Won Children's Hearts, Changed Publishing Forever, and Became an American Icon Along the Way. It was written by Leonard Marcus. The pair curated an exhibition of original Golden Books illustrations. Diane didn't begin her career in publishing. She was a dancer, actress, and spoken word performer in New York's avant-garde scene in the late 80s and 90s. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start this way. How does a dancer and an actress go from New York's downtown avant-garde scene into publishing?
Actually, it was the other way around.
Get out.
I moved here in the summer of 1987, and I got my job at Golden Books in the fall. I have degrees and a fine arts degree in modern dance and a degree in journalism. So I really moved to New York to do it all. And about a year and a half after I landed the job at Golden Books as a very junior person, I got into the performance scene and started performing.
Doing it on the side?
Yes. So I had
and
two
lives. And not making
lives.
Any money doing
no,
it on the
no.
side.
No, no. And I wasn't making any money in publishing either, by the way.
Of course not.
So I really had this strange life where I, you know, was a children's book person by day, and I was in the avant-garde world in the East Village, you know, the world of Rent, the play Rent.
It
was that world that's really no more in some ways. But
did you feel you had struck a balance, or did you want more one more than the other, or you were happy?
When I finished getting my journalism degree, I realized I didn't want to be a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was probably my last few years in college in Ohio, at Ohio University. I walked into the student bookstore, and I realized that every time I walked into the student bookstore, I went to the children's section first.
Huh.
And something, a bell went off as I was getting ready to graduate, you know, and I thought, that's what I should be doing. I want to be in children's
so
books.
So there was a real attraction for you and children's books.
Right.
Do you know why?
Well, I grew up, I was a reader. That's all I really did was read. And I just couldn't get in. And I was writing poetry and stories from the time I really could hold a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
So I never aspired to be a children's author at that time. That just was too, you know, that was too
lofty.
Much. Yeah, too lofty. Yeah. But getting into the business, then that became a goal. I wanted to see through, and I got to do that. But I was, you know, by that time I was working every day in children's publishing, and it wasn't as lofty a goal.
Do you feel that you, quote, stepped in it by landing a job at Little Golden Books, the premier venue of children's books? I mean, did you feel you couldn't aspire to anything greater, even though you started at the bottom?
But yeah, well, I couldn't believe I was working for this iconic line of books. Actually, I sent my resume to Western Publishing, and I didn't really realize that the name of the company was Western Publishing then, and they produced the Little Golden Books.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until I got a phone call from Golden Books for an interview that
I made the connection.
Mm-hmm. I just, because of course I sent my resume to every publishing company there was, you know, and they weren't even in New York. Really, they had a small satellite office in New York, but really the headquarters was in Racine, Wisconsin at the time. So I got this, you know, I had sent my resume to New York. I think they had forwarded it on to Wisconsin. And I later saw my resume. It had someone had written maybe on it. I was a maybe.
But then it turned out to be a yes.
But I got the job, you know.
Now, I read something that you had written for Huffington Post, that your mom used to read Golden Books to you, of course, like most moms and dads did with their children. And I'm just going to read one or two lines. You said, "Mom tells me that during those story time sessions, I would tell her that when I grew up, I would make books like these. And she always adds that she knew I would, But it's amazing to me that I did grow up to edit and write little golden books. Really? That's
it's amazing. It is. I mean, my mom is not very surprised, you know. But I loved being read to, and I loved learning to read. I loved being a library aide in elementary school. That was a high point when I got to be a library aide. My parents were big antiquers, so on the weekends, they would drag our family to antique stores all over Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania. And to stay sane, I would look at the antique children's books and buy them. And my older brother would buy the old radio tubes and things like that. He ended up rebuilding radios. And I ended up buying antique children's books and reading them. And just, you know, that was really all I really wanted to do was to read at that time. But I think it all began with golden books, like with so many people in this country and even in this world. I think so much happened with little kids with little golden books, because those books really brought us the world. You know, that's where I learned about, I still remember thinking farms and mountains and beach. I had never been to the beach. You know, I grew up in Pittsburgh. I hadn't seen a beach when I was a little kid. I hadn't yet been to the beach. So I still remember staring at a picture of a boy in shallow water on the beach, and you could see maybe a starfish under the water. The artist drew it so you could see.
So it opened the world to you.
It really gave me the world, and I think that's why little golden books are so loved, because their distribution was so vast that it brought the world to so many children all over this world. And it really helped me understand the world. I knew that I would be going to birthday parties, and I would be going to farms, and I would be seeing the ocean one day. And it really, I was just 3 years old. I still remember sitting with my mom and looking at these pictures and just realizing I couldn't wait to get out into that world. You know, and I'm a big traveler, and I still think my love of travel and adventure really comes from those books.
Isn't that wild? I remember them, and I know that they were read to me, but I guess in looking back, they didn't have maybe the same impact that they did on you.
Well, I also, because I've worked with the company for so long, I've had so many interesting moments where I've reached for a book on the shelf and then realized, oh, I had this book, you know, and I've gotten to relive it more than perhaps you or many people have gotten to do, you know.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Diane Muldrow. She happens to be the editorial director of Golden Books, and she is also an author. She's penned a whole slew of them, too. How would you say golden books have changed over time? Do you think there's a formula?
Well, physically, they've changed. In 1942, when they were published, originally they were 42-page books, and they were jacketed. So if you look at the really old little golden books, people often comment on how much text there is in the books. And it's because when the books were cut down, these came out during World War II.
Right.
So it's amazing to me that these books came out at all.
When
at a time
did.
Of paper rationing, but that's only because Western printing had already allotted, they had been allotted huge paper quantities, because during the war, your paper quantities were based on what you had used the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So they were sitting very pretty in terms of what they could publish. But even with that, it was pretty obvious pretty quickly, even though the war was coming to an end, that they were not going to be able to sustain the 42-page count.
Mm-hmm.
So they were cut down to 28 pages. So the books of the early 50s were 28 pages, and then they quickly became 24 pages, and that's where they are today. So a lot of those old books have a lot of text because those editors in the early days, they cut the pictures out. Some were black and white pictures. So the obvious choice was to cut those black and white pictures out, keep the color pictures, and keep all the text.
So when somebody wrote a children's book back then, it was the writer and an illustrator. Was the illustrator the same person for all the golden books back then? And was it the same author, too?
The 12 books that came out originally in 1942 have quite an array of authors and illustrators. Some of those people went on to do many little golden books, such as Gustav Tengren, who illustrated The Pokey Little Puppy. He ended up illustrating really the most iconic golden books we have. We have the Saggy Baggy Elephant, The Shy Little Kitten, Tawny Scrawny Lion.
I love when you name them.
Yeah.
It's just how could it not bring a smile to someone's face?
Yeah. So he did all those. And those are still some of the best-selling and the best-known of the little
And what about
books.
The authors?
The authors—
Did they farm that out?
I'm not so sure about the authors of the early books.
Mm-hmm.
Jeanette Sebring Lowry, who wrote The Pokey Little Puppy— From what I know from Leonard Marcus, I think she had written for Harper. And I think she wrote young adult stuff for Harper. So Harper was already a really burgeoning company, and maybe she had written The Pokey Little Puppy, and they said, oh, it would be better as a little, you know, as a not for us, but for somebody else. Or, you know, it's just like today, people know other people. And
say. But you know what's interesting about that, too, now? Richard Scarry, who is just a huge name.
Who started his career.
Exactly. Yeah. But for the most part, this is embarrassing now because I can't think of who penned the Nancy Drew books. But, you know, there's
Carolyn Keene.
Carolyn Keene. Yeah.
But that was a pen name, too.
Well, but that you knew that, that one knows that. Yeah. The authors, and maybe I'm wrong, but the authors of Little Golden Books, for the most part, are kind of anonymous, right?
The original books, up until very recently, have never had the author and illustrator credits on the covers.
Because?
They were small, and I think those original editors and designers liked the cleaner look of not having those bylines. It looked almost like maybe a part of a bigger puzzle, you know, to have just these nice covers with a character as big as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, only recently have I been asked to start putting the author's names on the covers.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I actually do like a cleaner look myself, and so does my art director.
Mm-hmm.
But we do work with some pretty well-known names in the industry, and it's nice to put their name on the covers.
So how long did it take you to move up the ladder? You started as an assistant, you said, right?
As an assistant.
And you've never left.
I did leave. I left for 5 years.
Okay.
Yes.
Because?
I went to Scholastic for 4 years, and I was a freelance writer for a year. I had always wanted to see how I could, if I could do a freelance life. And 1 year was great, but it was enough.
A little stressful, huh?
It was very lonely.
And then, so Golden Books took you back?
Golden Books asked me to come back because of my knowledge of the backlist. By that time, the company had been bought. This was the late 90s when Dick Snyder had taken over the company. And they wanted people with the knowledge of the backlist because in that backlist was, you know, there were a lot of gems. So I came back in 1999, and I've been with them since. I actually went through a bankruptcy very quickly after coming back, and I was part of the acquisition. Random House bought Golden Books in 2001. Random House was our chief competitor, and it was the best thing that could have happened to the brand. We could have been bought by an animation company, or that would have been okay in some ways. But these were real book people.
Exactly.
Who loved Little Golden Books, who had grown up with them and who knew them so well. So it was the best. It was really just a wonderful, wonderful time to start really doing as much as possible for this wonderful American brand that had not had kind of gone a little bit south, I thought, in terms of the quality.
Mm-hmm. So new life was breathed into this. Mm-hmm.
Random House was behind
brand.
That.
Right.
You know, I was, although even with Dick Snyder, I had asked him, can we do more with this? Can we turn it into, can we make them, call them classics? Can we call them Little Golden Book classics? Can we do certain things with the look of the books?
With billions sold, you'd certainly.
You know, I don't want them to just be old books that people sort of take for granted, you know. So we started calling the vintage ones Little Golden Book classics,
and
just
they can
little
be recycled
things like that, you
right.
know. We're just. I think it was nice that they let me do that. They actually asked me to put a letter on the back from myself, which I thought was an unusual thing to do because one person had never been associated with Little Golden Books. Even as you were saying, the authors, who are the authors?
Yeah.
You know, we don't really know much about the authors. And I really didn't want to do that. And he wanted my signature. Dick Snyder wanted my signature and everything. And I really resisted that. But he insisted. So up until, again, very, very recently, for the last 10 or 12 years, there's been a letter from me on the back of the classic, the ones that I reissued that were vintage, you know, classic.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Diane Muldrow, editorial director at Golden Books. She's also the New York Times bestselling author of Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Little Golden Book. Are parents today too jaded for Golden Books?
We have data that shows that Little Golden Books have 98%, I think it's 98% consumer recognition. This is such an American icon. It's such an American brand. And why is it that way? It's because these books were available to all people. This was a revolutionary idea that started at a time when there was so much change happening. World War II, everything changed, right? Mm-hmm. It changed our society forever.
For sure.
Because of the things that went on in our culture at that time. Little Golden Books is just one of many, many changes that happened. Little Golden Books were sold in places where people shopped every day, where you bought your milk, your tobacco, your newspaper.
And what did they go for, a quarter?
They were 25 cents. And this didn't just happen out of nowhere either. We had already in place this publishing revolution of the paperback book. Okay, so that the pocketbooks that Simon & Schuster was publishing, that was it broke ground for children's books to be sold in a mass way. Mm-hmm. Up until that time, children's books were luxury items. They were not something people had lying around in their homes as we have today.
It would be a frivolous purchase.
It was an expensive book. It was perhaps a library, more of a library thing, a library buy. There weren't a lot of bookstores on Main Street USA.
And there aren't any more either today, you know.
So, I mean, I don't have any data for this, but I've always liked to think that Little Golden Books, because when they were published in October 1942, they quickly sold in the tens of thousands months later. I mean, they were a phenomenon overnight. And people, even during the war, could come up with a quarter to buy their child a book. And that's when people wanted normalcy in their family lives, you know? Another thing that helped Little Golden Books at the time was that metal was also being rationed. So metal toys were not really available. So books were a toy.
Let's move to your golden books, the ones that you've penned. How did it come about for you that you moved, you know, over to the side a little bit in addition to your, you know, administration duties mm-hmm. to write golden books? Was that expected of you almost?
Well, it was something that the editors were free to do. And I really am so grateful for the experience of being on staff and writing Disney and Barbie books. Because that was boot camp for me as a picture book writer. And I like to teach picture book writing workshops. And I always tell the students, I learned how to write a picture book because I had to take maybe a whole Disney movie and cut it down into, you know, a 24-page or maybe even a 16-page
book. So give me an example of a Disney book.
Well, we did these little board books called Little Nugget Books back in the 80s and 90s. And they were, I can't remember how many pages they were, but they were, you know, 4 inches square. Not even. I think they were 3 inches square. How do you take an entire Disney film and distill it
exactly
down into the?
So answer your question.
It was my brain hurt when I was finished, but it was a fantastic experience because I also had a journalism degree. So I had already been taught to write, you know, with a punch. You know, it wasn't about the length of your piece, obviously.
Absolutely.
You had to be able to write with brevity, and every word had
and
to count.
And tell the story. I know that from news writing.
It was great.
Radio news
it was
writing.
Great
yes.
training. Uh-huh. I was a modern dancer. I had my fine arts degree in modern dance. And I learned all about, you know, in our choreography exercise, it was all about flow and a beginning, a middle, and an end, and how to choreograph a piece that felt full and
so
rich.
It was a natural act for you.
It was a very, I didn't really realize it at the time because it certainly didn't feel natural to do them at first. But the first book I wrote on staff, you know, I didn't get paid for it, but I was so thrilled to have my name on a book. It was a Bambi book and it was a rhyming, I made it rhyme. Mm-hmm. It was count to five. I mean, it wasn't even count to 10. It was, you know, count to five. And I remember asking my boss if I could write it instead of hiring it out. And she said, sure. And I was so thrilled, you know, that I got to write this book and that I had my name on it and that I made it rhyme. You know, I remember watching the movie Bambi and then just kind of going with
it. It was natural.
So, but, you know, from then on, I wrote a lot of stuff on staff. Again, there was no money, but it was just thrilling to see your name on a book. And I wrote tons of Barbie, lots of Mickey Mouse, and I wrote other licensed stuff. Then I became a big Pokemon writer. And when I was that year I freelanced, I was writing all the Pokemon stuff. Honestly, if someone offered me, you know, a chance to do it today, I would still do it because I love how it really makes you work. Mm-hmm. Hard to take a whole movie and distill it or come up with a concept that works with a license. Like Pokemon, I had to write a counting book and a color book. And I decided, let's make them rhyme too while I'm at it. You know, so what rhymes with Pikachu, you know, or what rhymes with all these crazy characters' names? It's really hard.
So what does rhyme with Pikachu?
Oh, I was blue, I guess.
Or Achu.
So you just really learned about, you know, how to make a good book. Because every book has to be good. You know, if it's a Mickey Mouse at the Firehouse book, it's just as important as something much more prestigious.
And they sold?
Oh, yeah. They sold. I mean, I didn't receive royalties or anything. But I had I wrote a Pinocchio movie retelling that was one of the best-selling books of one year. I remember thinking.
That's fabulous.
It was just fun to be on that list, you know. And, again, it was just really, really great training. I didn't have any original ideas for picture books. I kept thinking, when am I going to have an original idea?
But you eventually did.
I did. It took many years, though.
And so how did that come about? You know, how did We Planted a Tree, or where did Giggles come from? Where did those inspirations come from? Did you just go to bed one night and think, I want to write a book about laughing?
We Planted a Tree, the title came into my head, and I didn't write it for 10 years.
Really?
But I thought about it for 10 years.
That's crazy.
You know, I remember I was working at Scholastic, and Scholastic was wonderful in that they brought in a lot of teachers and librarians and to speak to us about books they wanted to see, books that were topics that were trending, or it was really helpful as, you know, an editor to hear what they were looking for in schools and in libraries. And that was probably a part of a discussion about we need more green books. And I just remember writing in my notes, We Planted a Tree. It just came to me. And I thought the word we was very, very powerful. And so I thought for years, well, what is that book? And then one day I was watching the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour, and they were interviewing Dr. Wangari Maathai, who I'm not sure if I said that right, but she had won the Nobel Prize for getting her countrymen in Kenya to plant trees and literally reforest that part of Africa.
So there was the impetus you needed.
It was such a fantastic story that I thought, well, there's the we. Her countrymen, right? And it empowered these people to
So
to
it was more
plant.
Than simply, you know, how does a tree grow? I mean, it had much more significance than that. That's terrific.
So that was a really once I had the Green Belt Movement, which is what she won her prize for. That's what it was called. And then I started thinking, well, a tree is a worldwide thing, you know. And then I thought, wouldn't it be great to set it in Brooklyn and in Africa, too?
Mm-hmm.
And let's see families from two places. And then I added other cities. And so you see people all over the world planting these trees. And you don't have to know about the Green Belt Movement. You don't have to know about anything, really. It's a book that little kids seem to really love.
Once again, if you're just joining us, my guest today is Diane Muldrow, editorial director at Golden Books, who also happens to be a New York Times bestselling author of Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Little Golden Book. This is a hoot and a half. How did this come to pass? And is it more than 20? It's more than 24
pages.
Yeah, because
it's a book for grown-ups. So each page has
an illustration from an already existing
vintage. They're all vintage illustrations from the 40s through the 60s.
With your captions and comments. Mm-hmm. So give us the genesis of this.
You know, again, this took many years to come to fruition, but I was on the subway one day going to work, and like I do in the morning, I don't know. I just kind of sit there and space out a lot. I look at people reading and doing work, and I'm just not one of those people. So it just hit me on the train, you know, Everything I Need to Know I Learned from a Little Golden Book. And I just thought, oh, wouldn't that be hilarious? You know, you could do, you know, like life lessons. And I grabbed a piece of paper, and I just at that moment started writing because I have these images in my head, you know. All these images you see in the book, most of them I look at all the time because we're always spinning the books into new formats or so forth. I'm looking at a lot of these wonderful pictures all the time. And I'm just so exposed. Like a picture of, say, the animals exercising is one of my favorites. There's a picture from the Saggy Baggy Elephant where he's lying on his back in the water and his little belly's showing and he's spouting water onto himself. And it's I think what unites these pictures is the joy. I mean, these were some of the greatest illustrators of the 20th century. So you already have that amazing quality. But you also have scenes there, no matter what's happening. Another one is Tawny Scrawny Lion walking under the moonlight, and he's whistling. And every time I see that picture, it just makes me feel
Smile.
So peaceful. Mm-hmm. Peaceful because he's so content,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over the years, I just started seeing some of this art and thinking, I wish I could feel like that. Or, you know, you just start, because as adults, we maybe lose a little bit of that joy or that contentment. And we love, as children, we get to be exposed to these wonderful books where that's what it's about.
Well, it makes us smile and it makes us happy. I'm going to take the liberty of just reading a couple of pages. The book begins with all these lions and tigers, and it says, "Is your life starting to feel like a circus?" And it goes on to say, "Don't panic, today's a new day." But this is so great. There's this granny-type woman who's dusting, and you write, "Get dressed first thing. Sweatpants are bad for morale. Put on something nice." I live in sweatpants. But, you know, it says, "Have some pancakes." And it went, "Stroll. Go on a picnic." It's so simple. Look up. I mean, these are not heavy duty.
No, they're not.
Your knack for stating the obvious is almost embarrassing to the reader. You know, it's more than stop and smell the roses.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, to me, again, those pictures embody joy. And when I see those pictures, and when everyone else sees these pictures, they see and feel joy. I mean, I've worked on this brand for over 20 years. And I cannot tell you how many times adults, when they find out what I do, it's always the same reaction. It's, oh, you know, like they become this sweeter person. Remembering.
Men and women?
Yes, men and women. Uh-huh. There's no gender gap here. It's, and they can tell me, you know, which books they loved as children. It's amazing what adults remember regarding this line of books.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, it's the same thing. It's this look in the eye, this happy memory.
You're transporting
it's
them.
It's like Rosebud, right? It's
yeah.
Like, they're transported back to those wonderful little books. And I think that is because, well, they were very well done. The art was great. They were well written. They were very strong characters. But if you're exposed to them as I am every
day
you know, for 20
yes.
years,
yeah.
you start to realize there's a lot of joy in these pages.
So what's in your future?
I have a few more Everything I Need to Know books coming out.
Do you? So there'll be a series.
Yeah, it's an official series. The first month when it came out, it did so well that actually our president suggested I do one on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So I said okay, and then we did one on love. I'm doing one on love, which I just finished.
So everything you need to know about love you learned from Golden Books, as in just generic love, loving thy neighbor,
loving yourself. Loving your friend, your pet, love for your sibling, love for grandpa. You know, it's all in Little Golden Books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the great thing about Little Golden Books. There's really nothing in our lives that isn't addressed in some way in these books.
What about death?
Death is not so much in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it has been addressed in the
Or
books.
Sickness or hard times.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, love, the love one that's coming out, deals with heartbreak and starting over,
mm-hmm.
which I think everyone has been through. It doesn't have to be a breakup. It could be a death of someone. I keep that a little open-ended in the book. But I really was thrilled to be able to deal with heartbreak, but in this lighter way with, you know, we've all had our heartbreak.
Of course.
So that's something very universal. Little Golden Books are very universal.
Oh, boy.
So it's just really fun to see how these little books have spoken to all of us and how adults have never stopped loving them. And this book was my really a Valentine to the adults out there who still love them. So.
Diane, this was just fabulous. Thank you for transporting us back to not even our youth, to our younger days, and that these books are alive and well and are going to continue long
yes.
after we're not
yes,
here.
Yes, very much so. I reissue vintage titles every year, I would say at least 3 or 4. So I'm always bringing books out of the vault.
Dusting them off?
Yeah, and bringing them back into print. And then also I hire writers to do new books. So every year I have new Little Golden Books coming out, and those are done very much in keeping of the books as they have always been.
Mm-hmm.
A certain flavor, a certain classic style to the art. I mean, I want the art to be of today,
mm-hmm.
today's style, because that belongs to us today.
Of course, of course.
I'm not trying to be something of the past, but when we choose the artists, we really want quality art that will stay timeless. But it needs to feel fresh, and so do the stories. But I tend to do classic content in those stories.
Well, the combination has worked. So. I mean, that's the beginning and the end of it. I mean, that's as much a fact as anything. Thank you so much for joining me
Thanks
today.
For having me.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.